For 30 years, a German immigrant named Christian Karl Gerhardsreiter lived in America under a number of aliases, most famously as Clark Rockefeller, an invented member of the Rockefeller family, and he's charmed his way into executive positions in Wall Street, some of the world's most exclusive social clubs, and even a marriage to a wealthy, successful Harvard Business School graduate. His deceptions began to unravel in 2008 when he kidnapped his 7-year-old daughter and disappeared. He was captured later in Baltimore and is now in prison. Mark Seal recounts the history of these deceptions in his latest book, The Man in the Rockefeller Suit, The Astonishing Rise and Spectacular Fall of a Serial Imposter. It's published by Viking. I'm very pleased that it has brought Mark Seal back to our show. Hello.
Hi, Leonard. Nice to be here.
Were you aware of Clark Rockefeller's existence before the story became headline news?
I was not, and a friend of mine from New York called me and said, Mark, did you hear about Clark Rockefeller? I said, no, I haven't, and she had gone out with him, more or less, met him at a gallery here. She said, you have to write about him. He's not who he says he is, and now he's kidnapped his daughter, and that started me on the trail.
So where is he from? His name is Christian Karl Gerhardsreiter.
Yes, he's from Bavaria in Germany, a very small village, and he came to the U.S. at 17 in 1978.
And he came because some people sponsored him?
No, not at all. He came because he met a young man on a train, and he always dreamed of coming to America. He was a big student of film noir, especially the work of Alfred Hitchcock, and he met a young man on the train who said, if you're ever in Connecticut, stop by and say hello.
Well, at least they didn't make a deal to kill somebody. So he wound up coming here at 17.
Yes.
Did he have any problems fitting in?
In the beginning, yes, he spoke good English, but with an accent, and he lived with a family in Connecticut, and there in front of the television, he found some inspiration. Remember Gilligan's Island, Thurston Howell III, the eccentric a millionaire castaway. He would imitate his speech, according to the police.
So he put on this fake upper-class accent, and that covered up the German side of his accent?
In the beginning, it was hard. He finally perfected it and began speaking with an upper-crust accent. And by the time he got to California, as Christopher Chichester, 17th Baronet, he had a upper-class almost British accent.
How old was he then?
He was about 20 then.
So how had he kept himself going? I mean, where was he getting his money from?
In the beginning, his parents were sending him money. And as he went along, he went to college. And he went to college in Wisconsin. And so he was, in the beginning, from his parents.
And then so he became Christopher Chichester III, then Christopher Crowe, then Clark Rockefeller, and finally Chip Smith.
Right.
Did they have anything in common other than the fact that their first names began with C?
No, not really. Each identity came with an equally audacious biographical switch, and each one kept getting grander and more unbelievable, but somehow it made sense because he had the trappings of wealth in so many ways. He was smart. He looked good. In the end, he had art on his walls. He was smart.
And he was so inventive in these stories, he probably could have made a living as a writer.
Oh, definitely. He was so smart. I mean, as Christopher Crowe in Greenwich, Connecticut, he passed the Series 7 securities test, which some business school graduates have to take 2 or 3 times to pass. He passed it the first time with no education or experience in the field.
Now, he was Chichester when he married Amy Gersild in Wisconsin?
At that point, he was still Chris Gerhardt. He had changed his name. He had kind of abbreviated his name from Christian Karl Gerhardsreiter to Chris Gerhardt.
Mm-hmm.
But on the marriage certificate, it says Christian Gerhardsreiter.
And do you think it was a love match, or was he trying to get a green card?
Everyone agrees it was for a green card. She testified at his trial, and she said he married her to get a green card. They separated at the altar, and she really never saw him again after the green card was given.
So then he got this marriage certificate, which allowed him to stay in the United States, and then he moved to California, to San Marino, California.
Oh, yes. You have to picture this place. It's 12 miles out of L.A., and it's like a different world. It's Norman Rockwell, America. small town, trusting people. There were clubs that he joined and went to and met the locals.
It's ironic that San Marino, the original San Marino, is this little principality in the middle of Italy, an independent country in the middle of Italy. I don't know if it still is, but for most of its history, it was a communist country. So it's about as opposite to San Marino, California, as you can imagine.
Yeah, and you know, they did an exchange program in the Olympics, San Marino, Italy, and San Marino, California, and Chichester was part of this back in those days.
Not a representative,
but they had a party, and he said he brought over the Olympians, and he told people that his mother had a construction business in the other San Marino, the Italian. This is in the paper.
He said he was related to Lord Mountbatten.
Exactly, a nephew of Lord Mountbatten, and he would pass out cards that said, 13th Baronet, even though the 11th Baronet was still alive. And it was quite, you know, he would take a lady's hand and kiss it. According to the locals there, he was quite the bon vivant.
Well, he spent a lot of time socializing. Did people ever wonder what he did for a living?
Yeah, they did. He didn't apparently have a job then, but he was also, at the same time he was in San Marino, going to USC film school. People would see him with a script under his arm. But he wasn't apparently enrolled in the school. He was just dropping in on classes, according to a professor I spoke to.
And he was claiming to also be a Hollywood producer.
Yes.
Did he produce anything?
No. But when he went to Greenwich, Connecticut as Christopher Crowe, he said he was the director of Alfred Hitchcock Presents, which was a TV show at that time. And if you looked on the credits, there was of Christopher Crowe directing it, just not him.
A couple named John and Linda Sohos were also living in San Marino at the time. How did he get to know them?
Well, he was living with John's mother, Dee Dee Sohus, and he had the guest quarters in the back of the house. And John and Linda, a very young couple, moved back in with John's mother.
Mm-hmm. And then they disappeared.
They disappeared quite mysteriously. And it was determined that they had left supposedly on a government job, even though none of them had any experience. John was a low-level computer program. Linda was an artist who drew fanciful horses and things like that. So it was quite a mysterious disappearance.
And do we know what happened to them?
We don't know exactly, but John's bones were dug up in the backyard of the house where Christopher Chichester and John and Linda lived. And shortly after their disappearance, a few months, he showed up in Greenwich, Connecticut, driving their truck.
So there's circumstantial evidence that he may have killed them.
He was
charged. Or at least been involved with their disappearance.
On March 15th of this year, he was charged with the murder of John.
And the disappearance was also featured on the TV show Unsolved Mysteries.
Yes.
So why is it taking so long for this case to progress to just March 15th this year? We're talking about the 80s, aren't we?
We're talking about 30 years. Well, because they knew that he was Christopher Chichester, and they knew he was Christian Carl Gerhardstrider, but they did not know he was Clark Rockefeller.
My guest is Mark Seal, who's written a book called The Man in the Rockefeller Suit. It is published by Viking. You spoke to a number of people, 200 or so, I gather. How many of them were willing to talk about Gerhardstrider?
Well, you know, this man was beloved by a lot of people. They liked being around him. And so a lot of people were eager to talk about him and willing to talk about him because he was the life of the party.
And but weren't they embarrassed about having been taken in by him?
I don't think so, because he was so smart and so good at what he did that I think now a lot of people say, oh, I knew, I felt, you know, that he wasn't who he said he was. But at the time, it seemed like everyone went along with it because he wasn't asking for money in a lot of cases. There was no investment scheme that he was offering, at least in the later years. So you tended to believe him.
So how was he getting money?
Well, later he married a woman who had a sizable salary. And along the way, according to the police I interviewed, there may have been a scam or two. But also, you have to remember, as a securities broker in New York on Wall Street, he was making in excess of $100,000 a year.
He came here, and he just became a broker? This is a pretty hard thing to do to this get shows started how smart on Wall Street?
This shows how smart he is. He was hired by a company called Nico Securities.
What was he claiming to be at this time?
A bond broker, corporate bond broker.
Named Clark Rockefeller?
He was Christopher Crowe then. Oh. And not only was he a bond broker, they let him run the whole department. And some of the people in the department were experienced bond brokers. Some of the people even had experience on the Federal Reserve Board. And here was this man running the department for a short time.
And he could deceive people who were professionals in the field?
Well, the cracks began showing pretty soon in that field because he knew nothing about selling corporate bonds, the people told me. So, you know, it would be like a dentist not knowing what a bicuspid was.
So he left Wall Street or was,
eventually.
Was he fired?
He was fired from Nico Securities, but by then he was interviewing for a job at Kidder Peabody.
And then he disappeared for a time.
Once the police started seeking him to ask him about the missing couple's truck, he disappeared for about 4 years.
Do we know what happened to him?
There's various theories where he was, what he was doing, but we do know that he emerged as Clark Rockefeller on Fifth Avenue in New York at St. Thomas Episcopal Church.
But he had a lot of eccentricities and personality traits that were unusual, to say the least. Nobody questioned these things. I mean, this is a man who keeps on coming up with these preposterous stories.
Talk about eccentricities. Okay. He would never eat at a restaurant. Can't trust the kitchen, he said. He'd never stay in a hotel. He always had to stay in a private club. He would never eat anything but white foods, he said, like turkey on white bread. Pepperidge Farm, it had to be, with the crust cut off. And he said his favorite cookie was the Nantucket by Pepperidge Farm. And also his favorite food was the Scottish dish, haggis.
And then, which is not white, but...
That's right. Good point.
Then he didn't wear socks either.
Right.
So I assume people just saw this as proof that he was the real deal.
Well, he was always dressed in chinos, a polo shirt, and a Yale cap because he said he went to Yale when he was 14. He also said he grew up on Sutton Place. He also said that he fell down the stairs when he was a young lad, and he was rendered mute. And only when a neighbor brought a dog over, he said the word wolfness, and that broke the spell and he could speak again.
Now, weren't the Rockefellers hearing about this long-lost cousin?
That's a good question. I wasn't able to find any Rockefellers who would say I heard about him. And the police, when the FBI called the Rockefeller family, they said, we've never heard of him. So apparently either they didn't care or they just never heard about it.
You mentioned a great art collection, all forgeries.
Yes, but such good forgeries that even curators of major museums couldn't tell that they were forgeries. And these were the greats of modern art.
Would you say his greatest success as a con man was marrying Sandra Boss?
Probably, because here she is, this intelligent, smart, attractive woman on a career path, and he was able to more or less mirror her interests and values. Also, by being a member of St. Thomas Church, in a way, he was vetted by the church, just being a member of that, a congregant of that church, in a way, people thought, oh, he's okay, he's a member of the church. So, you know, he got around by mirroring people's interests.
But the question I'm sure most people have is, how did this intelligent woman buy into all of these outrageous lies?
Well, I think the answer is that so many people did, and so many people believed, and so many people thought, hey, he's a Rockefeller. He's eccentric.
How long were they married?
12 years.
And then why did they break up?
Well, they broke up in the end because she discovered that he wasn't who he said he was. But that was in the course of investigation. There were a lot of cracks in the marriage before then. But eventually, that was the reason they broke up.
Now, he probably would not have been discovered. He could have gone to another name if he hadn't decided to kidnap his daughter. Why did he do that?
That blew the lid off the whole 30-year con. Well, he lived for 30 years in all these various identities, and then he was brought down by the love of a child. One detective in the case told me that everything in this man's life was a lie, except for his love for his daughter.
He had decided to educate her himself.
Right.
And so he took her to Baltimore, changed his name.
Yes, yet another identity. He had set up another life in Baltimore under the name Chip Smith, a high seas ship captain, and he had bought a house there under with the appropriately named street named Ploy Street.
And how was he finally caught?
He was caught because, okay, they did a international manhunt over land and sea after he kidnapped his daughter. Everybody thought he was a real Rockefeller until they tried to find some details about him in the databases, and nothing came up. It was like he never existed. There was nothing under Clark Rockefeller. But people from all over the country were calling in, hey, I knew him as this man or that man, and that's what happened.
Now, during the trial, the defense tried to persuade the jury that he was insane. Is there evidence to prove that he wasn't just a con man? Was he actually convinced that he was these people?
Well, that was the big question of the trial. He claimed insanity. He took the insanity defense. The defense said no, and the jury found him guilty. So they thought he was sane.
Had he done anything illegal when he lied in order to get into Wall Street or into exclusive clubs?
Well, they say that it's not illegal to use a name that's not yours if you're not involved in a crime.
Mark Seal will be giving a reading and signing books at the Greenwich Library in Greenwich, Connecticut at 7 o'clock. And then tomorrow he'll be giving a talk at the 92nd Street Y in Tribeca at noon. For more information about tickets to the latter, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. And my great thanks to Mark Seal. At least I think you're Mark Seal. The book is The Man in the Rockefeller Suit. It is published by Viking. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you.